to the Resilient Migrant Podcast, a podcast where African immigrants get to talk about their experiences as they assimilate to a different country. This is your host, Brenda.
Hi. Thank you so much, Mr. Naftali Murioki, for joining me in this podcast. Welcome. Naftali works for the U.S. Navy, and he has a lot to tell us about his story and his life. Welcome, Mr. Murioki.
Oh, thank you, Brenda. It's an honor, privilege to be on this platform, and appreciate your consideration.
Very, very glad. You know, I want to learn a lot about your story and being in the Navy. And before I even go on, I know last week was Veterans Day, and I want to thank you for the service. How many years have you served in the U.S. Navy?
Right now, I'm going to 19 years now.
Wow. So
18 and a half years. Mm-hmm. Wow. I've been quite a journey.
Wow, that's quite a journey. So before we get to learn more about how you ended up in the U.S. Navy, I'd like to know what country you were born in.
I was born in Kenya, mm-hmm. In central, a place called Manu, mm-hmm. In Thika, mm-hmm. and that's where I grew up before I migrated over here.
So did you go to school in Kenya?
Yes, all my school, I went to Kenya, my primary school, my secondary school, and also like a two-year college. I didn't finish my college because I had to choose college in USA, so I chose to come over here.
So what made you want to come to the USA? Because you said you had a choice and you decided to come. What made you make that choice?
Back in probably 97 there, 98, we had somebody that came by from our village and told us about the green card. And, you know, back then we were applying with papers, not online. So I had to fill up a form. Actually, interesting thing is I helped to fill somebody's form. I had mine. I did not have enough postage to send my paperwork. So I forgot about that story because I didn't have enough. What I had saved, I took a passport and that was it. My money was gone. So I didn't have any resources. So I was like, okay. But I helped the other guy in 1998 and he won. And I was so challenged. And I was like, you know what? I'm doing it the same in 99. So in 99, I did it. And I use the same passport. So even though they said, hey, 6 months has to be within. So I use the same one. And luckily enough, I got the call. And it's a process.
Wow. You know, you said you applied when people were doing things by paper. I'm sure people can. This young generation is hearing that and they're like, what? You applied using paper, not online. You know what? When you think about it, that was like over 20 something years ago. Wow.
Yes, it was a paper, and that paper, you know, you duplicate it like 20 times. So it was a duplicate of duplicate. I don't know what series it was on, but it was a duplicate, a little bit faded. And, you know, the paper that I had, I duplicated a copy and I saved a copy. And then I use the other one. So the copy that I saved like a year ago is the one that I applied with. I tried to tell somebody else, hey, apply. And they're like, yeah, they kind of, you know, push me out and like, yeah, those things don't work. Mm-hmm. I forgot about it. Mm-hmm. Went to college, in 01. And then I was in Kabete Tech. So I did that by April, May timeframe. We got the letter. And I'm like, hey, congrats, you are one of 100,000 people to be, you know, to be selected for this. However, we have to get more details. And, you know, back then, you apply, you wait for a year. You fill up the forms that they want, you wait for another year. So in 01 and then 02, that's when I got the appointment for the embassy. And this thing I started back in 99. Mm-hmm. So It's something that you apply and then you forget about it.
Wow.
And then all of a sudden you have a letter and then you're like, oh, okay. Hmm. Yeah, it was
great, great, great story. So I'm wondering, when you got to the States, were there any culture shocks for you?
Oh, yeah. I left home in November. Mm-hmm. And in November, I left. And then I went to Dubai. I had to do a stopover in Dubai. That was my first time on the airplane, first time getting out of the country, or first time getting away from maybe like central, let's say central province or something. The farthest I went is Rift Valley, but that was the first time. So culture shock. Mm-hmm. Spend the night on the waiting seats for Dubai. That's why I took a nap or slept over there because we arrived at midnight. You have your envelope that has all the visa and all that stuff. So that was my pillow because I could not let that thing go. You know, that was my ticket. So after that, we landed in Boston because I came through Boston. Oh, you know, you're up the air out there and the sun is hitting the windows and you're like, that place is hot. Culture shock. Get off, walked out of the airplane. The temperature changed from like 80 to like 40s. And that was it. Mm-hmm. All my body, I had chills everywhere. Mm-hmm. And of course, going through the tunnels and all that stuff. That time the Boston, airport was going through a lot of rehabilitation. So there was a lot of opening spaces in between before you go through there. So all that wind chill was hitting you left and right. So yeah, talk of culture shock. That was something that I was not aware of.
And Boston is very, very cold. For those who've not been there, Google the weather in Boston. It gets very, very cold. So you landed in Boston, stayed in Boston. Any other culture shocks after you stayed there for a few days or a few months?
Oh, there was this white stuff that was coming down. I didn't know what it was. I thought it was mud. Snow. What is snow? I was like, okay. And, you know, at that time, yeah, a couple of weeks over there and you're trying to get your direction as to, okay, I migrated home. I made a choice. Now I need to start looking for a job. I need to start, you know, getting my bearing right. Mm-hmm. And it's not the same. It wasn't the same. It's not like, oh, here's something that's on the plate already had it for you. And there you go. No, it's not. There's nothing like that. Yes, you can migrate, but you have to do your work as well.
So when you first started, and I've never asked any immigrant this question, but I think it's a question I should start asking people, because most people start working either menial jobs or humble beginnings. Were there any kind of jobs that you started how did you start? Like your first job in the US, if you don't mind discussing that.
Actually, the funny thing is, I never had a fast job. Mm-hmm. What I did, I used to help out in a shop for my host. So my host had a shop. I used to, you know, just go over there. I'm living at their house, so it's okay for me to work over there because, you know, they're providing everything for me. So it was a non-paid job. I didn't expect to be paid anyway. But it was a humble beginning for me because, you know, one time I was left on the shop and somebody came in and bought some stuff and they gave me cash and talk of now little culture shock. What is dime? What is penny? What is quarter? What is this? Good enough. Luckily enough, that customer was a Christian. So I could not figure out the change. I learned the thing and I couldn't tell the change. I couldn't tell which is which. So she was telling me, okay, give me that little small one, the brown one and the silver one and the bigger silver one that has a 25 on it. Mm-hmm. And you add up, that's going to be my change. And I was like, wow, okay. That was a quick lesson for me.
Wow.
So it was, yeah, I never had a actual like paying job. The Navy is my first paying job.
Okay. So what made you decide to join the Navy?
So we were looking for jobs left and right. And, you know, back then in 01, no, in 02, in 02, there was a lot of security jobs that was out there. But at that time, they were looking for more female security jobs. The male, of course, you have to be a big dude. I'm out there fresh from Kenya, less than 120 pounds, skinny. And, you know, of course, you know, they want big guys. They want big guys who is like 180 pounds. Mm-hmm. So, but for the females, you know, the job market was there for them for security. Mm-hmm. I tried to go into, CNA. I got the school, but I didn't have the ride. I didn't have the transportation. Mm-hmm. So even though they were offering like a 2 or 3, 4 week course, I couldn't meet it. I tried also to, I had a deal with the post office actually. All I needed to do was four weeks, like every Sunday, go to a training. One of the recruiters was doing that for the post office. So 4 weeks, but I didn't have the money. When I migrated in the US, I only had $80 wow. in my pocket. $80. That's wow. all I had.
Wow. So after that, you obviously joined the Navy. And before we continue, I know I personally sometimes get confused, and there's so many areas of the military. Is that the word you use generally for every category of the military?
Yes. It would be okay to say military, but then, you know, just know that military, there's like a couple of branches. You have the Army, the Navy, the Air Force, mm-hmm. and the Marines.
Okay.
And now you have the Coast Guard who belong to Homeland, but, you know, during war, they belong, you know, they're activated as well.
So what does the Navy do?
So the Navy, their job is, you know, to the Navy, mostly they are the water people. But the mission changes, you know, everybody is now coming together. Mostly it's a force within, you know, within the maritime. The Air Force, of course, is for the, you know, they control the air. The Army, they are the ground guys. The Marines, they are the ground guys as well. But, you know, the Marines, they're like, they go in and out. Army keeps the peace, or they keep up with the area over there. So everybody has their different roles.
So why did you make that choice for yourself to go to the Navy and not the other kind of military?
So this was my thing. When I left home, I was like, the government gave me the chance to get out of here. And the thing is, I'll try as much as I could to be employed by them, because they're the one who took me out of my home. So they gave me the opportunity. So I was like, look for a job 4 months down the line. Couldn't find any. I mean, two or three months down the line, I couldn't find anything. One of the host, grade seven. I think you know who he is. I'm not going to mention him on the air. Mm-hmm. He's the one who recruited me.
Okay.
He's not even the Navy recruiter. He's mm-hmm. the one who recruited me because mm-hmm. he was playing, video games with the jets, mm-hmm. The Navy jets and all that stuff. And because he knew more about the Navy because, you know, he was interested in those jets. And he's like, yo, oh, by the way, you can join the military and the Navy. You know, you can go do all that stuff. Because my priority was for education. Or where can I get an education? And, you know, where can I get a good salary or a paid salary? Mm-hmm. So he told me about it, that they offer tuition, and they offer this. And I walked to the recruiter. So I knew I wanted to be in medical side, or at least to be in the medical side. I didn't look for any other areas. I just went straight to the Navy guy and I talked to him and he like, Oh, yeah. We can look into this. You know, as of course they were looking for people. Mm-hmm. Remember, there was a 9/11 that happened. Mm-hmm. So the military was upping their people. So they were highly recruiting anyone that they could get. So me walking over there is like a gold mine.
Gold
for them.
Mine.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So. Mm-hmm. So they were like, yeah, so that's good to go. Let's do this paperwork mm-hmm. and all that stuff. I took a test, like a pre-test for them, and I scored high. They're like, oh, okay, let's take you to the Boston MEPS and let's go over there and you can take the test. Mm-hmm. I ended up taking the test and I passed. They're like, oh, okay. Then, okay, yeah, let's go back and sign all this paperwork. And that's how I got recruited in April. Actually, I was supposed to ship out in August of 2003. But then I had to request to ship out as early as I could. So I shipped out in April of 2003.
So how long was your training period?
Training is, so I had series of training before mm-hmm. I got released to the, you know, to the outside out there. So mm-hmm. you have boot camp mm-hmm. that you go through for 8 weeks. Mm-hmm. And then from there, I had, cause I wanted to be in medical. So in the Navy, we all have different work. Mm-hmm. You know, it is like, okay, if you are an electrician, you just be an electrician. If you are, if you're going to be doing plumbing, that's your job, plumbing. You cannot be an electrician. Mm-hmm. So you're not the handyman. Your job is specific. So mine was medical. So they had to send me to medical school. So they call it hospital corpsman. Mm-hmm. So I did that, went through in Chicago. The boot camp was in Chicago. The school was in Chicago. After that, I wanted to specialize. So they gave us an option of specializing into technicians, you know, to be technicians in the medical. Mm-hmm. Like if you want to be a surgical technician, a respiratory technician, x-ray mm-hmm. technician, mm-hmm. or pharmacy technician. So they offered those, but you know, they give us, so I chose pharmacy technician. And, but before then, they are like, okay, if you want to go to that school, you have to go to another school first. So they shipped me to Jacksonville, in North Carolina. I did the training over there. After that, then I went to Virginia Portsmouth to go through the pharmacy tech school. That was a 6 months. It's like a two-year course. Turned into a 6 month course and actually five month course. Cause the last month you're doing the attachment. So yeah, every day was a test. Every day was a test. So it's cramming. You had no time for thinking of going out or doing anything because wow. You knew the next day you have a test.
Wow. Thank you so much for sharing that. I'm wondering, it sounds to me like that was a real adjustment, just having to study all through. Was there any other biggest adjustment for you when you joined the Navy?
So, yes. The biggest adjustment, okay, my accent, very heavy at that time. Nobody could understand me. Oh, man. It was a challenge. And I'm trying to twang like them. I couldn't. So, and of course, you look around, you don't have any Kenyan guys out there. We all diversified. You see Asian, you see Caucasian, you see the African American, you see everyone out there and everybody has their own, mm-hmm. Accent mm-hmm. and you all in one group and trying to train together and become one. That was the hardest thing. The advantage for me, I was physically fit. You know, I was playing soccer back in Kenya. Mm-hmm. So I was already physically fit. So that did not bother me. Mm-hmm. What bothered me is, mm-hmm. you know, retaining the material and going through the testing and all that stuff. Mm-hmm. So that was a challenge. So I had to work extra hard for that. Mm-hmm. But when it comes to physical stuff, that was easy for me. But that's where they were struggling. Mm-hmm. And they were a little quick in getting, you know, understanding everything out there because they grew up in this system. I didn't. So yeah, it was a challenge.
Talking about physically fit, I've seen some of your pictures and you've gone for marathons. And the thing that shocks me, when I see these pictures, is that you have a lot of weights. I have two questions. How many marathons have you gone for? And how much weight do you carry when you go for these marathons?
So when I was stationed in Newport, Rhode Island, we trained for the Wounded Warrior Project. Mm-hmm. And we trained and trained and we walked out. We did the Boston Marathon. Mm-hmm. And for us, instead of running, we walked with weights. And so everybody had almost like a 40-pound bag, wow, or 20-pound bag. 30 to 40-pound bag. And we walked those 26.1 miles. And it was awesome. It was second to none. That was the greatest moment for me. So, yeah. Started like super early in the morning, like I think 5. Mm-hmm. We were down by noon. Mm-hmm. That's when you are like, oh yeah, that's the end point. Whereas, you know, the Kenyan guy who won it, he left us like, I think we were on mile 6. so he left, we were like, oh yeah, that's the leading guy. Oh, okay. So, and we already had a head start of almost 45 minutes or even an hour. Mm-hmm. And we walk in it. But it was good. It was good times.
Oh, wow. Wow. 40-pound weights.
40-pound weight. But then that's what we trained with because before I went to the pharmacy tech school, I went to the field to train to be with Marines. So being in the, you know, in a medical field. So the way it is, Marines, they don't have medical. Mm-hmm. So Marines, if you look into the structure of the military, they fall under the Navy. So the Navy provides medical for them. So how do they do? They trained the hospital corpsmen to be with Marines. So, and that's why we can deploy with Marines anytime and keep up with them because we already trained and know their culture. So for us doing that that walk with the pound backpack on our back, I mean it was part of the training that we had already gone through. After that, I've done 2 full marathons out of Quantico, Virginia, or out of it's the Marine Corps Marathon. So I did 2 of them. And then I've done a lot of half marathons. So, yeah, there's a bunch of half marathons I've done everywhere.
Bravo, bravo to you, Naftali. That is a lot. I did, I think, 2 walks, 20 miles 2 times. And I was like, never again. I'll just give money and walk. So it really requires a lot of physical fitness. Thank you for sharing that about you. The other thing you mentioned as you were talking, you've moved from different cities in different countries. Can you mention some of the places that you've been deployed to or places you've worked in?
Okay. So when I came in to, so I came in through Massachusetts. After that, they sent us to Illinois, Chicago. After that, I was in North Carolina, Jacksonville, and then Portsmouth, Virginia. After that, they sent me to Okinawa, Japan. I stayed there for like 14 months and then came to Newport, Rhode Island. Out of Newport, Rhode Island, I got sent to the desert in Afghanistan. So I was there for almost 9 good months in the desert. And that's when during Obama time, when there was that big surge of over 200,000 military in Afghanistan during that war. So we were in there. And then after that, I came through to Quantico, Virginia, then went to California, San Diego. After that, they are like, hey, just keep going all the way to an island somewhere in Hawaii. So I was in Hawaii. And then after that, now I'm back to Virginia again in Norfolk.
You've really, really traveled. I'm curious. I know you can't talk much about your stay in Afghanistan, but as a human being, when you got that news, because there's always that negative, climate about Afghanistan, but you had to go work there because that's part of your career. How did you prepare yourself mentally? Like, what was going through your mind at that time?
So at that time, you knew the culture of what's going on. There's a war going on. And, you know, the leaders that we had, they were always telling us, hey, you have to be prepared. You have to be prepared for this. So for military, you know, you have to have your stuff in order, meaning that you have to have your will on order. You have to have, like, who's going to be paying your bills, you know, all those things. Someone has to have access to your stuff. So in the mind, physically, you are prepared for it because, you know, you could see people going or people, like, they come to your department and they're like, yeah, so-and-so is goated to go. They are the next one. I got orders to go with a division. So the Marine division, to go over there. And then, something happened. They got delayed. They canceled those orders. And then I thought I was off the hook. And a few months later, they're like, oh no, you're going with a medical battalion. And I was like, oh, okay. So we were already prepared, but not prepared to what we're going to face out there. So yes, you train and all that stuff. But then when you start seeing the extent of the injuries out there, if you don't have the heart, you may not take it. Cause some of the injuries it's worse than gunshot wound. It's worse than what you can see out there. There was a time, you know, an extent where a time where, you know, You got military men coming out with no legs. They're all amputated already, but all they have is a tourniquet on them. The injuries were not addressed. So they just got medevac by a helicopter and they were brought to us and we're the one who's going to take care of it. So, the worst smell ever, I think it's a smell from a fresh, burnt skin that kind of stays out there for a while, and that's what, you know, we were, you know, that was something I was not expecting. And then, you know, of course, you know, we're in the war, so there are people who are gonna survive, people who are not gonna survive, whether it's on your bed or not on your bed. You know, some of them, they come, okay, they got medevac when they were breathing, but then at the time they come to us, the person is already gone. So it was one of the hardest things to talk of. A lot of people have PTSD from that stuff. Mm-hmm. A lot of people, you know, their mind is no longer the same. And it's something that's very challenging in the military out there. So when you come to mental health is huge. It's huge.
Wow.
So, yeah.
Wow. Thank you so much for giving us your story. As you were talking, I just could try to put myself in that situation, and obviously it's not the same. And you really, really touched on very delicate situations. And talking about mental health, as a person, as Naftali, you've really had a tough job. You went to Afghanistan. You've seen a lot of things. How do you take care of yourself mentally? What are some of your coping strategies?
So mental, when you come to, I'll talk of wellness, mm-hmm. wellness.
Yes.
When you come to wellness, you know, there are a couple of dimensions out there. I think there are 8 dimensions out there. Mm-hmm. And one of it is, you know, physical. You have the physical dimension. You have the spiritual dimension. Mm-hmm. You have the social dimensions. There are other out there. But what have kept me going, one is spiritual dimension. So as a Christian, you know, my background is Christianity, so I have a deep belief in Christianity. And every time I see myself in a dark position, that's my source of strength. That's where I'm gonna, you know, are gonna reflect and, you know, try to reach out and get that help. Mm-hmm. The other thing is physical. So if you can't keep yourself physically fit, those emotions gonna come up to you. So if I'm like super stressed, super depressed or something like that, I just go out and run and just breathe out all those emotions, all that. By the time I come back, I put myself on a challenge, run like almost maybe 5-6 miles. By the time I come back, all that is gone. I'm refreshed. So those are ways to cope around. But, you know, of course, you have to reach out to your counterparts. You have to be able to talk about it. Because, you know, some of these things, I mean, if you don't talk about it, it's going to eat you up. And that's what I see a lot of people. You're getting point of depression, but you don't want to talk. And if you keep it everything to yourself, nobody knows what's going on with you. So I highly encourage, like, if anybody is going through that, the biggest thing is find a better dimension for you to take care of your wellness. Because wellness, if you take care of your wellness, you're going to take care of your health. And if you don't do that, it's going to be a challenge. There's a lot of platforms out there that can help you out. Military, we have our own route that we go through. We got psychiatrists, we got, you know, we got platforms that are out there, like Military Answers is one of the good platform to use. At the same time, you know, you can talk to your supervisors and they have better information for that. So these avenues, it's just, as a person, you have to take the initiative to seek help.
Wow. Thank you for sharing that. And I like the fact you mentioned about the eight areas of the eight dimensions. I like the way you put it. I think I'll get some notes from you. I've never heard it that way. And we've mm-hmm. learned, I've learned a lot from you. So I know you spoke about the social aspect of it, your spiritual, physical. Thank you. I want to turn the tables around. We're almost ending on this section of you being in the Navy. And I like asking this question. I know when you were thinking about this interview, we talked 3 weeks ago, your mind must have been racing about what is she going to ask me? What is she going to say? Is there one question in your mind you think I should have asked you and I didn't?
So one thing I can say is the military, it has supported my family. That's something I can say. When I joined the military, I was single, but at the same time, I had a fiancée. She was back home. I was in the U.S. and, you know, it was a long distance relationship. Went through all that, was able to bring her over here. And since then, I mean, everywhere we have gone, I've gone through with the family. And without this job, it would have been a little bit challenge to pull this through. But now the boys, they are like, one is 14 years, the other one is 10. So that's one thing I'm glad that I did. And then as you stay in the military, I've made more friends, like way much more friends out there from every country you can think of. So the biggest thing about the biggest advantage about the military is diversity. Mm. So it hits you really hard on that diversity, and it opens up your mind, you know, your thoughts, process changes. Because, you know, once you're cut off, tunneled in one area, you tend to think, you tend to thrive on the negativity of whatever that's been spread about certain race or certain ethnicity. And until you live with them, until you share with them, you don't understand everything out there. So diversity has been a huge benefit for my life, and My mentors, they're everywhere. Of course, one thing in life, you need to find a mentor. That's one thing. So and that's what has helped me a lot. So, military, family, there's mentorship. There's now the other family that I have, because, you know, when I look back, okay, I live in, you know, 22 years in Kenya, and the rest of my life is, you know, it's half and half. So the more I'm, you know, the more I'm staying here, the more I have more friends than back home. Because back home, people forgot about you. You're only there once in a while. But most of the time I'm here. So I have more relationship with them than, you know, sometimes back home. So.
Wow. So what I hear you say is that you've found a lot of support within the military system, and they've supported your family, and there's a lot of resources. That's what I heard you say. Thank you so much for sharing that. I really do appreciate. And now I want to turn this conversation to some fun questions to know something personal about you. Mm-hmm. I know men in the Navy are always in uniform. Mm-hmm. So my question to you, what color uniform did you wear in primary school?
Ooh, the color in uniform.
Yeah.
We had maroon shorts and yellow shirts. That's what we had. Uh-huh. And the maroon, I think the sweaters were maroon as well. If you could have found one.
If you could. Did you wear shoes or socks?
Shoes, socks? Mm. Maybe during festivals or during the songs, when you're going to do the solos, you borrow some, mm-hmm. maybe if you don't have some.
Oh.
But eventually I ended up, my parents ended up buying some for me. Mm-hmm. Of course I had shoes, but you know, little guys with soccer, there's no way you're going to play your best shoes out there. You're going to use your best shoes in the field. Mm-hmm. So you take your shoes off, leave them in the school, and leave them in your class, and you go out there, play soccer. By the time you come back, yeah, you put them on, but then you forgot that, hey, you have all this dust on you, and you go home, and you get called out. You're like, oh, yeah. You say you are with shoes. Okay, let's take all of those socks. And then all of a sudden you have all this dirt on you. You're like, okay, yeah.
Well, interesting.
So, yep.
Interesting colors. So I'm also very curious, and I forgot to ask you this. You've traveled to so many cities and lived in different cities. What was your best, what is the best city that like you really liked?
I think, there's a couple of on my list.
Mm-hmm.
One is Newport, Rhode Island. It's very fun.
That's beautiful.
That's nice, very beautiful. Except the winter, but that's the best part of it anyway.
Mm-hmm.
So Newport, Rhode Island is one of the best places I've been. Mm-hmm. And then San Diego. San Diego is another area.
Mm-hmm.
And then the highlight of it is Hawaii. Hawaii is like crystal blue water out there.
Mm-hmm.
The only thing is you have to be deep in your pockets,
mm-hmm.
For that. But Hawaii is pretty nice. It's just the weather is like back home.
Mm-hmm.
So it's now I'm back in Virginia. I'm a little bit spoiled. I'm feeling a little bit of cold every time. I'm like, oh, it's been like almost 6 years since I lived in the East Coast.
Uh-huh.
So yeah.
Wow. Interesting. So what's your best sports team?
My best sports team is Chelsea. So Premier League. So Chelsea, they just whooped Leicester City this morning 3-0. So yeah, so Chelsea all the way.
That why you said you are running late doing something?
No, this was already done. I had to pick up some bikes for the kids.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. My last question to you is, imagine you were a DJ, and I'm having fun asking this question to you, knowing how sometimes you can be a serious face. Imagine that you were a DJ. what would be your DJ stage name?
DJ stage name, oh yeah. Man. I think I'm gonna borrow the nicknames that I've been called mm-hmm. left and right, because majority of the people they cannot pronounce my name. Mm-hmm. So I tell them, oh, I'm Naftari. I'm like, huh? What? Yeah. Mm-hmm. So I have Nafti, mm-hmm. Nafi. So I'll go with Nafti.
Nafti, okay. Okay, interesting. Yeah, DJ yeah. Nafti, that's interesting. Thank you so much, Naftali, for being in this podcast. As we come to a conclusion, do you have anywhere you'd like people to reach you, or any resources for people to research more about the Navy, or any, I mean, the floor is yours.
So, more about the Navy or the military. So every military branch has its own website. Mm-hmm. For the Navy's, like the navy.com or .mil. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of information about the recruitment, mm-hmm. The requirements for all that stuff. So the website has a lot of information out there. So, and then for my case, you can reach me out if you need to on my email, naftarigishohe@yahoo.com. So it's naftarygishuhe@yahoo.com. So that would be the best way to reach out for me.
Okay. Thank you so much. That will be a great resource. I personally would like to encourage people who would like to join either the military or the Navy to contact Naftali, or even the resources that he gave. Really, really appreciate you coming to this podcast. I have learned a lot about you, things that I didn't know about you, things that made me laugh. It was a great, great conversation. So thank you so much, Naftali, and God bless you.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. Thank you, Ben. Thank you very much.
You're welcome. Bye.
All right, bye.